Cheers, Brendan.
Good greeting, Alan.
The Not a Thing Podcast 127. We're back. It took us a couple extra days this week to record our normally very weekly show. It's been almost 10 days since we recorded. It's wild. What was?
Well, we had to be save it for the special Friday the 13th podcast.
Oh, shoot. I didn't do any Friday the 13th specific things.
I had my general bad luck. Okay. That's about it.
I didn't wear a hockey mask at all this week.
I do plan on murdering a house full of sorority sisters later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, great. I mean, you
have... Or going out to a camp. There's no camps to go murder people at because it's winter.
Yeah.
Summer.
It is.
It's real kind bummer of... when Friday the 13th falls in the winter. Jason would be frozen in Cave Crystal Lake.
Oh.
For legal it's... purposes, I am not actually going to murder anybody. <It's a> joke. I mean, I think everybody understands that, but I want to be crystal clear.
Yeah.
Camp. Crystal Lake clear.
Nah. Well done, sir. Well done. Well, another reason that our show was delayed this week is that we actually had all the best intentions of recording on Monday because we ended up...
Yeah, we're going to record early.
We were going to be together in person on Monday. Yeah. It was going to be really neat. But there was a delay. There was about 6 hours of a delay. So Brendan and I went up to Santa Rosa to stand in line at the fabled Pliny the Younger release at Russian River Brewing. And it was quite a long line. Actually, I don't think it was necessarily a long line. It was just... a long time in line.
There's a slow-moving line.
Yeah. For those not familiar, Pliny the Younger is a... well, first of all, it's an excellent beer.
I think it might be my favorite beer.
It's a very, very, very good beer. If you're familiar with Pliny the Elder, which is a double IPA that they make, and they do sell out of their tap room, and they sell kegs to a bunch of places. It's also an IPA, but it's like all the things about Pliny the Elder, but more. So it's a higher alcohol content. It's more hoppy. There's a lot more aroma. There's a lot of, you know, body in there. It has a smoother finish. It's really just a fine beer. I'm not 100% sure still if it's a 6 hour wait kind of beer, but I'm
no beer is a 6 hour wait kind of beer.
Well, but we had three of them, so that's like 2 hours a beer. That's almost reasonable, right?
That's like a movie, a beer per movie.
Except we saw no movie.
Oh, we saw the movie of life, Alan.
Yeah, so. Even though it was 6 hours standing, you know, outside in Santa Rosa, it was six really nice hours standing outside in Santa Rosa with you and Skylar, who also ended up in line with us, despite the rain delay of his work.
It was perfect. It rained just early enough for him to get out of work and then was beautiful the rest of the day to enjoy it.
Yeah, it was almost like... too warm at one point while we were in line. It was nice. But it was actually a really nice day. I mean, I remember remarking with you numerous times before, during, and after that it was still better than going to work that day.
Oh, yeah. I'd rather spend 6 hours standing in that line for delicious beer than 8 hours at work sitting in a cubicle.
If only I could get paid for standing in line for 6 hours to drink beer. I mean, I guess I was, right? Because it was paid time off.
For you. I wasn't smart. I didn't use a vacation day. I should have. That would have made it even better. Getting paid to drink.
Oh, that's, yeah, that should be a thing for sure. Well, Pliny the Younger, definitely a thing. I would say, though, if you can find a way to get it at one of the places where they're sending kegs, or if you just happen to be in Santa Rosa and the line looks a little more reasonable and you jump on it, definitely do it. It's worth having. One interesting note about it is that, and I think you might have a little more color about how this worked out, but it looks like the way they did the line is that everyone is waiting in line for a table. You can't just walk in and stand at the bar and get a beer. So that meant that, and they were kind of enforcing a 3-hour limit if you came in. Although I don't really remember seeing them actually enforce that. I do remember them kind of checking in quite a bit if your drinks looked empty or if your food looked empty to kind of hurry up the turnover. But I think if you were there and kept buying beer, I don't think they would necessarily kick you out. But it was hard to tell, only because the line didn't turn over as many people as I would expect for a place. Although, if you're waiting in line like 3 hours for beer, you're gonna wanna wait around to drink. I mean, we ended up getting there into the place at like 4:15 or so, and I don't think we left until six something.
So yeah, we took a couple hours, enjoyed our drinks,
yeah,
had some food, and then went to another brewery, the Bear Republic Brewery up in Healdsburg,
yeah,
and tried their triple IPA, and there was no line, and we got food right away,
yeah,
and within 2 minutes we were drinking, but I don't think it was as good.
No. No, it was...
And I'm not just saying that because I stood in line for 6 hours.
No.
The floral notes on the Younger, I think that really puts it over the edge for me.
Yeah.
Like the hoppiness is really great.
Yeah.
Not too bitter.
The Fastback, I think it was called the Fastback X3, like Racer X3 is the name at the at Bear Republic.
Yeah.
And it's clearly an IPA, and it is very hoppy. But I don't think it was as balanced as well as the Pliny was. I think, and I'd have to try it next to it. I think the 120 minute IPA from Dogfish Head is really good, and it's not as rare as the Pliny the Younger. So I think the beer that's closest to Pliny the Younger in taste is probably kind of that one. Although the availability is similar in that, as far as I know, they only ship it in kegs occasionally, and you pretty much have to go to San Diego to get it otherwise. So I don't know. It's not a bad thing to have good beer around. We should definitely do a beer tour again soon.
Yes, for the podcast.
Of course. Always for the podcast.
In the name of science.
Well, continuing with the podcast, a story that we've covered a couple times. It was actually one of the topics of our first show, is the darknets, and specifically the Silk Road darknet, for selling various things, but kind of had the notoriety of being a marketplace for illegal drugs and firearms and all manner of things. And the supposedly anonymous person running the site, the Dread Pirate Roberts, was identified as a person whose name escapes me right now, only because Dread Pirate Roberts is so much more fun. It's a Princess Bride reference. What are you going to do? But that person was convicted of... 7 counts of a bunch of stuff. It was actually, he was convicted on every count that he was accused about. And this is a big deal because while he was running the site, in theory, he was not directly selling any of the things. And so This is kind of an interesting case from a privacy standpoint, because his it's saying that you can be tried and convicted for creating a place where people can would do illegal things without necessarily doing illegal things yourself. Now, there were other things that were related to him, but I'm not sure if they made it into trial. There was like a conspiracy that he was going to have someone killed. I remember that coming out when the charges were first brought, but it looked like that was not one of the charges that were actually brought when the suit kind of came through. But it's something that I think his lawyers are definitely going to appeal, and it becomes something that that a lot of people are going to look at. There's a lot of different angles to look at. There's the legal angles about how he did it, but then also the ways in which the the different three-letter agencies caught him were kind of interesting. They were I would say skirting the line in terms of what the police can do, or what those agencies can do in terms of getting information and search and seizure and stuff. And so that's all going to be worked out and interesting. It also goes to show that even someone that can use like heavily encrypted email and different services like Tor and anonymizing things can still be found given like a multi-year campaign, which it, from all accounts, it sounds like it was. So that's just a little nuts. You know, it's one of those things like how anonymous can you really be out on the internet? And apparently it's really, really hard to be. So, keep that in mind when you're private browsing and stuff like that. one other note about that was in the story was that even though the Silk Road went down and was was closed, other similar marketplaces have sprung up and possibly even do more traffic than the Silk Road ever did. So it's the kind of thing where if this is meant to be an example and fixing the problem, it's not really. Again, this is unfortunately one of those like things where is the war on drugs really, how warranted is the actions that are taken, if it's possibly harming civil liberties and really not actually stemming the tide of the problem.
Just life finds a way. People want to get high.
Well, food for thought anyway. That's what we're trying to do here on the Not a Thing podcast, sort of, not really. just bringing interesting stories around is really our bag. It's our thing, you could say. Speaking of things you can say, there's a new smart TV from Samsung, and it's using a voice recognition thing to do things like turn it on or change channels or otherwise kind of work with the TV. And that's sort of interesting in the way that it works. But what's especially interesting is that it doesn't do it by the TV itself. Like you don't just speak and the TV recognizes you. In fact, the TV is internet connected, and what it does is it listens, and when it hears talking, it records all of that and then sends it to be interpreted, and then those interpreted commands are fed back to the TV to change a channel or whatever you're doing. But in the privacy policy of the TV, it discloses that in fact, it's listening all the time. It's not just when you push a button or say, hey, TV, or whatever you would say. So it's listening all the time. So everything you're saying, including, private information, anything, is being sent to a place, being translated into text and then analyze to figure out if it means change the channel. I think this is not a thing.
I concur.
In fact,
that's creepy.
In fact, not only is it that the those things are being sent off and being recognized, they're actually not even being sent to Samsung. They're being sent to another company, a third-party company. So if you think about it, all of the things you're saying are being recorded by a company that's not the one that you bought the TV from. So you have potentially two vectors of loss of your personal information just from having a TV in your house. And they do mention that it could be opted out of and you could turn that feature off, but it does mention it's the default setting, so it's just on. That's really not a thing. It's just is not. Is it really that hard to use a remote control nowadays?
No, it's really not.
And also, what happens when you have just people in your house and you're talking? I feel like unless those commands are really dialed in to specific things, you could just have people talking in your house and like the channels change and the volume goes up or down. It just seems like a bad plan overall. And I don't want to like yell at the TV in order to do stuff. Sometimes I just want to watch TV, especially if I'm watching the TV like quietly, or if I have headphones on. The point of having headphones in is that you're not making noise, and now I'm going to be making noise in order to interact with my TV. It just seems like a bad plan on a number of levels, the privacy policy being a big one. I mean, who buys a TV with a privacy policy. It's whoever would think that a privacy policy would come with a TV. It's TV, for God's sakes. You're just watching TV, right? No, apparently not. So be on the lookout. This is one of those strange and insidious things that may or may not be coming to a living room near you.
Well, just, you know, don't put it in your living room and then you're fine. Tell your friends, don't buy this. Or tell them to unplug it completely when you come over.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be kind of weird at first, but eventually they'll get it.
Well, kind of in the same vein of dealing with privacy, instead of privacy of sound, there's privacy of your image. There's a company called Beta Brand, which I've seen, and they do kind of hip clothes and stuff, and I feel like we've even talked about something from them in the past, but it's not connecting to me. Anyway, one of the things they released this week is a jacket that is meant to prevent the paparazzi from taking your picture.
And I know that's a real problem for me.
I mean, you know, the notoriety from the Not a Thing podcast is epic. I mean, all of our fans out there, we thank you. We don't thank the ones that that have caused the paparazzi to stalk us and take our pictures all the time. It's a little annoying, you know.
We didn't even put our pictures on our website.
That's why they want to take our pictures. They want to see what we look like. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, I guess my Twitter handle's on there, and my picture on Twitter does, you can kind of see my face. Sort of.
Well, let's just say for those that don't want to be taken or have photographs taken of them, the way this works is it's a jacket that's essentially made of just the reflective material that would go into like the reflective strips on those like safety vests. But the whole jacket is made of that. So what happens is if you take a flash photo of a person, it completely whites out all of the jacket, and then the camera sensor will make anything that's not that, you know, appear black by comparison, and so it disguises your face when you take photos. It's it's an interesting kind of tactic. I think it has some merit. I think it would probably work if people were taking flash photos of you. But really, the problem is it would only work at night. I mean, during the day when you don't need to use a flash, you're they're going to see you. So maybe it just means you have to wear this jacket only at night, and you only go out at night.
Is that... Well, I mean, I feel like this is a great product for both celebrities and terrorists.
Only at night. Although, yeah. It is very, very reflective. So I think it's the kind of thing where people would notice you. So it's not like you could sneak around in it.
But it's so stylish.
I think the thing that you'd want to wear if you were trying to sneak around is that the opposite of this. I remember we talked about this on the show, the Vanta Black material. Do you remember that? It's the material.
We've done 120 something episodes of these, Alan. I don't remember a lot.
The material is this black thing with these carbon nanotubes, and the nanotubes are all vertically aligned to be perpendicular to the surface. So any light that comes in falls into the nanotubes and reflect around and just get absorbed. So it absorbs light from pretty much any direction, and it's very difficult for the light to come out unless it comes straight in and straight back out. So it's the least reflective material ever. And it's meant for like putting in the insides of telescopes and stuff like that in order to dampen reflections and stuff. But I feel like if you want like a really sneaky suit, there's that option. Or there's the hide in plain sight option of this one, which would prevent you from being photographed with a flash. I think there are options. Maybe you could kind of like zebra pattern it, and then you'd get the best of both worlds.
Or you could cut off John Travolta's face and swap faces with him, or Nick Cage, either one. Right. I feel like they're both up for it.
They seem to be. It seems to work really well.
Or whoever that extra paramedic guy was in Silence of the Lambs. All those are viable options for face coverings.
Well, it's funny you mention faces, because that's one of the things in a story this week about someone who wrote a program to automate Tinder. And I had to look a little bit up about this, and only because I don't use Tinder. It's not an app that I normally have on my phone. It's a dating app, and the whole conceit is all you're doing is putting up pictures of yourself, and when you're presented with matches, that's all it is. It's just pictures of people. So it's the kind of thing where you have like it's swipe left or swipe right, and it's left if you don't like them and right if you like them, and if you like them, it gives you the extra option of sending them a message. And so what someone did was, because all you have to go on is a picture, what someone did was took a face recognition software package and added it to this program. And what it does is it opens up your Tinder account, opens up pictures of people, and you have to seed it with a little bit. It's something like 60 faces, and what happens is it'll fuzz the faces a little bit, like blur them to like, you know, some amount, like 75%. And then it will put them in a database. So if you like them, it goes into one column. And if you don't like them, it goes into another column. And then it averages out those faces using the facial recognition software, and then figures out what a good face looks like and then a bad face. And so as pictures go through, once it's trained, it will look at pictures and then classify them in those categories. And then any of the ones that are good, it will then send a message to. But it actually, I thought it stopped there. But what it does beyond that, it then runs a separate program which was used to classify positive or negative reactions. So it will send like a canned message, and depending on what comes back, it will send another message. And then if you get a response from that second message, then they know it's a real person who's interested. It's crazy.
I mean, it's very clever, but could we do any more to stop human interaction before actual interaction? Like, online dating is one thing, but this is absurd.
Yeah. What I want is for two of these bots to meet each other and fall in love. And then when the people go to meet, they want nothing to do with each other, but they have to stay together because the bots, like, told them so.
This is feeling closer and closer to that movie, Her.
And, the ukulele song in that movie is actually really easy to play. If you're at all interested in picking one up, I can link that one. That would be good. It's a really easy to play. It's a little melancholy, so maybe not.
What? That movie melancholy? No way. That movie was a bummer.
Well, something that kind of comes out of that was there were some stories about how, I guess, the person that wrote that bot was, in full disclosure, kind of pointing that out to people, and a lot of people seemed interested about it. But what was I thought really interesting was the reactions from men and from women were different. Surprise.
Wait, you're telling me men and women are different?
It's really fantastic, right? I mean,
I've been going about this all wrong.
Who knew? Who knew? Well, if a match does work using that software, or maybe if it works too well, there are options for that now. There's a story out of the UK where the UK equivalent of the FDA is. They've cleared the possibility, and they've made it legally possible as well to have a three-parent baby. And this is nuts. It's really, really wild. And the application of this is that, or the use case for this, at least the way that it was described, was there's a woman who wanted to be a mother, but she has like a very severe mitochondrial disease. And mitochondria are these little microcellular things in everyone's body that make you a Jedi. Oh, wait, no. That's
that's midichlorians, yeah, that's, and that right. Doesn't exist.
Sorry.
that's not right. A thing.
And it's not a thing because those three movies are not a thing. Star Wars, yes, is a three-movie trilogy that starts with A New Hope and ends with Return of the Jedi. Thank you very much.
Until the next movie comes out. Right.
And then we'll jury's out. The jury's out. We'll see. But anyway, the mitochondria are thought to be like possibly even a separate organism that has grown in symbiosis with us. And they create ATP, or energy, out of glucose. You know, I'm doing this from my vague recollection of high school biology, which is at this point over 22 years old. So,
well, mine wasn't that long ago. It was still a while ago, and I remember something about factories of the cells.
Yeah. So, what's interesting is the mitochondria have their own DNA, which is distinct from human DNA. So it has some similarities and relationships, but so one of the things that they've identified was in this woman that had the mitochondrial disease is that what they could do is take the mitochondrial DNA from another person. It also had to be a woman in this case. I believe it's because of the way they're isolating the DNA. But it means that they would take the mitochondrial DNA from a healthy woman and implant it in with the regular cellular nucleus and DNA of this woman. And then the egg would be fertilized, and then the baby does not have the mitochondrial disease. So it's only using the mitochondrial DNA for the baby, so it's all of the other qualities of the you know, of the genetic expression would still come from the mother and the father. It's
You're not going to get a baby that looks like three people. It's still going to look like the two people.
Yeah. It's still kind of fantastic to think they can do this. And I don't, I remember seeing a stat in there that it sounds like they're approving these kind of case by case, or they're putting some kind of limit on how they do this, and they're limiting it to something like 150 in the next year, which I don't know. It just seems fantastic. That'll be something we'll have to look at. If that breeds some kind of crazy, thing where people can like move metal with their mind or shoot out kind of claws or something, we'll be on top of it. Don't worry.
I would say both. This is a thing if it can help people not lose babies.
Yeah.
That's definitely a thing, because you don't want people's children dying. But also, if it does generate the mutant X gene, I'm also fine with that. This is sounds like a win-win to me.
Well, if three-parent babies aren't your thing, and you'd rather not have babies, there's a place you can go, and that's Mars. There's a note, there's a competition kind of being held to find the next people to go to Mars, or rather the first people, maybe not the first people, but
people the first humans.
First humans. Is it actually the first humans? Because I didn't think the first mission would necessarily be a colonizing mission.
Oh, that's true. I don't know.
Well, anyway, they're planning. Early. There's a early missions. There's a company that's looking for candidates to send to Mars for colonization purposes, but there are a whole host of things that are caveats. You can't do this. You can't do that. The reason I brought that up is that you can't have babies because it's too kind of stressful and too many things going on to make that work. The way that it's described in the article is that you have to give up sex, but I'm pretty sure birth control would beat that. Like you could make a case that birth control could be done to be effective enough that not having babies is not an issue. I think
that sounds like a stupid colony if you're not having babies.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like, all right, we sent round one. You're all going to die on another planet. Maybe the next ones we'll let them have kids. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that you can't have is alcohol. And I don't remember why.
You can have alcohol. You can't have beer because the carbonation won't work. So you could have scotch, you could have gin.
Oh, thank God. You could
have all the spirits. Those are all fine. No. What's the point of going to another planet if you can't get shithoused on liquor?
Well, especially if you can't have sex. It's like, come on now.
So I can't drink, I can't have sex, and I have to eat freeze-dried food? That's a pretty weak sell.
Yeah, I think this will be a really hard sell for folks. But I don't know if I think going to Mars is a thing. I think coming back is also a thing. However, I do think they need to work out a couple kinks before colonizing a place. I'm interested in the plan in theory. Anyway, I think it would be cool if there are volunteers that would do that, because I'm sure. That would be a really interesting gig.
Why don't they send old people?
Hmm.
Just start sending nursing homes to Mars.
Wow.
I mean, you live, you know, people who are old, they've had a nice life, a long life.
Sure.
I mean, if you're testing things out, why not send old people?
Yeah.
Does that make me a horrible person for suggesting that? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I think
it's a podcast. We're spitballing here. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
Not
exactly.
all the ideas are winners.
Right. When NASA wants to include us in their think tank, you know, hashtag send old people to Mars, I think.
Have Buzz Aldrin lead them. That guy's a badass. And he's old. And yeah. He's been to space. That sounds like the perfect mission leader.
Right. Right. Exactly. And if you don't believe him, he can punch you in the face.
He will. I've seen it.
Well, if Mars is not your thing, perhaps Jupiter is your thing.
Or if getting punched in the face by a movie is your thing.
We're going to move... actually, we haven't done this in a while, moving over into spoiler land to talk about Jupiter ascending. At least, I think you're going to talk about it. I'm just going to react.
Yeah, from Mars to Jupiter. Yeah, I had such high hopes for this movie. The trailers look good. There was somewhat of a pedigree. There was a pretty large budget at, I believe, $179 million.
Wow.
Decent cast. And you don't get to see a lot of space operas these days.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about it while, you know, among many things we were talking about in line. And I think the last spacey movie I saw that was science fiction anyway. Well, I guess Interstellar was also science fiction. I meant... I guess I meant more kind of not even speculative fiction kind of fiction. I meant
lasers, like, laser space fiction.
Yeah, right. The last movie I saw like that was Star Trek, and that was like so long ago.
Yeah, or I think that was the last good one that we came up with.
Yeah,
there have been a few. That one didn't make it.
And we mean the first Star Trek, not Into Darkness.
Actually, I think John Carter came out after, and I remember we both liked that movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That was probably the last good space opera I saw. and that's going to change how some people now think about what I think of this movie. It's the thing I like that movie. Anyway, that's how movie critics, that's how that works. it's all based off the previous work.
Yeah.
But it was a very ambitious movie. It was visually great.
Mm-hmm.
The music was good. It was Michael Giacchino. He has yet to make a bad score that I've heard. Channing Tatum really committed to the role as a half man, half wolf, or genetically modified wolf man. I just kept thinking of John Candy from Spaceballs. Like a really handsome John Candy from Spaceballs.
He's a mog.
He's a mog. He's his own best friend. and you also had Sean Bean as a human bee hybrid, which never really materialized into anything.
Oh.
And if anything, I was hoping, and we are in spoiler territory now, I was hoping to see Sean Bean die, as he always does. And no, not even that. He lives. He just like disappears from the movie.
Oh,
like, he's
you
just
think...
like hanging out with some people. He doesn't go out in a blaze of glory. He doesn't go churn on anybody. I don't know.
He doesn't like. It's kind of his exit from Ronin in that way. Kind of. He's just like
and
he's in
gone.
It, and then he's gone. That's it.
Yeah, it was.
Well, he does exit the movie early.
Not in Jupiter. No, he's in the whole movie, but he's just kind of like hanging out with some other people, like not the main characters necessarily.
Okay,
I mean he does things, but he doesn't die and doesn't do anything super cool. the other thing, gravity boots. Channing Tatum has these kind of flying gravity boot things that he uses to ice skate across the sky. Is what it looks like. Which is pretty absurd. There's a lot of green screen falling and flailing, which looks terrible.
Oh, no.
Like, it clearly... Oh, look, they're hanging on wires with a backdrop because they're totally different than what's happening behind them.
Oh. For $179 million, you know, the effect that's one of the oldest to make you'd think they would get right.
Well, I mean, the backgrounds looked good, mm-hmm. but you could totally tell that they were not, it was not blended well.
Okay.
Eddie Redmayne's in it, who he's up for an Oscar this year. Uh-huh. He could win both an Oscar and a Razzie. Like, he was chewing that scenery hard.
I do appreciate a good. He's the villain.
He's the villain. Yeah, one of the villains.
Yeah, I do appreciate a good villain. And I think you have to do that.
But there's there's some good laser battles. There's like a cool base inside of a planet, which is a Jupiter, in fact. there's a lot of scrubbing toilets because they really want you to know that Mila Kunis can clean a toilet.
Okay, I didn't know that was a thing, but okay.
It's kind of like a space Cinderella thing. I don't know.
Okay.
I was entertained. I didn't feel I've been in other Wachowski sibling movies that I wanted to walk out of, I didn't feel like I wanted to walk out. I was like, maybe it'll turn around, and it's over.
Were they setting it up for a sequel?
But I was entertained. It was funny. Okay. Maybe. It was hard to tell. Mm-hmm. They didn't resolve everything, so it's totally possible. But it won't happen because it made less money than John Carter. So that's not going to happen. It felt like the script would have been great for a video game. Hmm. It would have been a great video game. But as a movie, it didn't work.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like sci-fi is a really hard sell sometimes. Like, you have to kind of play with what works and what doesn't, and it can be really odd. And I feel like one of the things that is a problem with sci-fi, and I don't know why exactly, because you don't have to do what these movies do, which is you add a kind of B plot, which really muddies the A plot, like really messes with it. Like, it wouldn't be enough to have kind of the major plot point, and then they throw kind of this secondary thing in, and it's like it becomes like the dominant problem. Is there that in Jupiter Ascending? It sounded like it was like just a little muddy.
No, it just, I don't know. It didn't have enough direction.
Okay.
It was kind of like, oh, and now we're at this next place. Okay, now another chase. There's like three huge chase scenes that all are the same thing with her just falling all the time and him speeding to catch her on his gravity boots.
Oh, so does she ever like come into her own, or is she just always the damsel
in distress? No, she's the damsel in distress.
Oh, that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. There are not enough strong female characters. That's too bad. Oh, well.
I think it does pass the Bechdel test, though.
Oh, really?
I think so.
So, for those not familiar, you should definitely look it up. Bechdel test, Bechdel. It's from Alison Bechdel, if I'm remembering correctly. She's a cartoonist, comic artist, who made up a test that says you have to... A movie, and a lot of movies... fail this test, and it isn't necessarily indicative of anything, but it's an interesting measure.
Other than sexism, it's indicative of nothing.
Well, passing the test doesn't mean it's not sexist.
It just That's means... true. No, it's literally the lowest bar.
Yeah, and the bar is you have to have, let's see, the first thing is you have to have two named women in the movie. And then the second part is those two women have to talk to each other, and they have to talk to each other about something not one of the men in the movie. And it passed.
I think so.
Okay, cool. Good.
I wasn't 100% sober when I watched it, so I might expect watching that movie stone cold sober would be a real hard experience to get through.
Excellent. Well, I mean, that's a very valid way of experiencing a movie. So you know, I think I can see
why they moved it from being their summer tent pole last year to releasing it in February this year. I was really hoping, like, oh, maybe there's some other reason. No, it's where movies go to die.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that The Kingsman will be the first movie to break that streak this year.
Is that this week?
Yeah, it comes out today.
Okay, that might be worth seeing. There's also the SpongeBob movie.
I'm more likely to see The Kingsman in the theater.
Yeah. Well, you know, everyone else will be seeing 50 Shades of Grey, so that's fine. That means more movie for me and you to go see something else. Did you get any good trailers with Jupiter Ascending?
I think there was a Jurassic Park that looked, you know, it's the same one we've seen before.
Okay.
I'm still cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, that's a good way to put that. It's a good way to put
that. Yes. This is going to be a great year for movies, because there's a lot of really good sequels coming out.
Well, at least there's the baseline around that. So
as far as popcorny movies.
Yeah, sure. Excellent. Well, hopefully we'll get to watch one or two or three or four of those popcorny movies. Maybe not before next week, but we'll do our best. I think it's a pretty good spot to pull the show together. Was there anything else you wanted to check in about, Brendan?
Nope. It's a three-day weekend. Let's go party.
Sounds good. Sounds like a plan.
Happy birthday to show composer Garen O'Brien. It's his birthday this weekend.
Oh, right on.
So everybody have some scotch on his behalf.
Listen to some metal.
Yeah, metal.
Right on, man. I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.